Hello, everybody. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now in Hosea chapter 2, which I will call Israel is Planted in the Land. Hosea is prophesying in the 8th century B.C., sometime before the fall of the northern kingdom of Israel in 722 B.C. to the Assyrians. His prophecy is to the northern kingdom. We're going to see a lot of bad things said about rebellious Israel, and then we're going to see God turn that around and fulfill a glorious restoration of Israel, not only physically, but spiritually in the church of Jesus Christ. So we start now in Hosea chapter 2, verses 1 through 2. This is God speaking to Hosea. Say to your brothers, Ami, and to your sisters, Ruhamah. Contend with your mother, contend, for she is not my wife, and I am not her husband. And let her put away her harlotry from her face, and her adultery from between her breast. So God is speaking to Hosea here. And God says, say to your brothers, that would be Hosea's fellow Jews. They are being exhorted to speak to each other about their harlot mother Israel. There needs to be some talk done. And of course, the brother Ami means my people. That was one of the three sons that Gomer had had. The third son, the third child, which was a boy. And Ami means people. And to your sisters, Ruhamah. Ruhamah means she shall have compassion. That was a second born child. Now, one naturally asks, why does God say to call the brothers Ami when the brother is named Lo-Ami, not my people? Now he's called my people, Ami. And to the sister, says sisters here, plural, because the three individual children of Gomer are being used as metaphors for the people of Israel. Well, why call Israel Ruhamah instead of Lo-Ruhamah, no compassion? Instead, we call her Ruhamah, compassion. Well, that's because Hosea is looking ahead here, or God is looking ahead, to the redemption that he promised in verse 11 of chapter 1, the last verse. We read in Hosea 1:11 this, and the sons of Judah and the sons of Israel will be gathered together, and they will appoint for themselves one leader, that's Jesus, and they will go up from the land, for great will be the day of Jezreel, and Jezreel means sown in the land. They will go up from the earth, from all the places where they were scattered back to the land of Israel. And that, of course, is the theme of this chapter. Israel is planted in the land. And so God is looking ahead to the good news here. Instead of Lo-Ami, not my people, it's Ami, my people. Instead of Lo-Ruhamah, no compassion, it's compassion. You're going to receive compassion. But before that happens, at the end of the chapter, God's going to let Israel know that he is not happy with her. Contend with your mother, says God to Hosea. More precisely, says God to the Jews, to the brothers of Hosea, contend with your mother, contend, for she is not my wife. Now, Yahweh loves to use marriage metaphors concerning the relationship of Yahweh to Israel. Israel is the wife, Yahweh is the husband. But he says here, Israel is not my wife, and I am not her husband. And that's because Israel had committed spiritual adultery. She had divorced herself from God. God says, let her put away her harlotry from her face, and her adultery from between her breast. I think face, this is the NASB translation, is pretty literal. Let her put away her harlotry from her presence is probably what it means, and then put her adultery away from between her breast. I take that to refer to lovers lying there in Israel's breast. Poole says, by an immodest and lascivious matter of framing the breast and laying them open, these kinds of women here alluded to did entice adulterers. Pretty explicit for an old-fashioned commentator. But at any rate, Israel has committed sin by being unfaithful to Yahweh. We go now to Hosea chapter 2, verses 3 through 9. Otherwise, in other words, if she doesn't put away from the adultery from her breast and the harlotry from her face, otherwise I will strip her naked and expose her as she was on the day of her birth. I will make her like a desert and like a parched land, and I will let her die of thirst. I will have no compassion on her children because they are the children of promiscuity. Just like Gomer's children were children of promiscuity. Jezreel, Lo-Ruhamah, and Lo-Ami. Yes, their mother is promiscuous. She conceived them and acted shamefully. You see how Gomer's children and Gomer herself picture Israel and Israel's relationship with God. For she, Israel, thought, I will go after my lovers, the men who give me food and water, my wool and flax, my oil and drink. Therefore, this is what I will do. I will block her way with thorns. I will enclose her with a wall so that she cannot find her paths. She will pursue her lovers but not catch them. She will seek them but not find them. Then she will think, I will go back to my former husband, for then it was better for me than now. She does not recognize that it is I who gave her the grain, the new wine, and the oil. I lavished silver and gold on her, which they used for Baal. Therefore I will take back my grain in its time and my new wine in its season. I will take away my wool and linen, which were to cover her nakedness. Now God is expressing a commonplace truth here, is that if you don't do right before God, sooner or later you pay. You might be prosperous in the short term, but it's all going to end up in disaster. Just read anybody's biography. Read all the rich athletes and rich and famous celebrities. They all end up in disaster. I have almost every last one of them that don't believe in God. So God says, I'm going to make you Israel like a naked baby on the day of her birth. Of course, a baby is naked when they're born. They don't have a lot. This refers to Israel in Egypt when Israel was utterly poor. Slaves in Egypt. I will make her like a desert, like the one that Israel stayed in for 40 years after Egypt, wandering around in the desert. You're going to go right back to where you were if you keep up with this spiritual idolatry and spiritual adultery. The mother is shameless, and then the mother thinks that her lovers are making her prosperous. They give me food and water, wool and flax, oil and drink. Wool and flax for her luxurious clothes, oil, perfumes, and ointments, referring to there, which of course are luxuries in Israel. Oh yeah, my sugar daddy's taking care of me. Yeah, right. But then your sugar daddy's going to leave you at the first sign of trouble, Israel. And so then Israel might be tempted to go back to God, but God's going to say, I'm sorry, you are going to be blocked with thorns. You're not going to be able to walk down the path because there are thorns everywhere. You're going to get enclosed with a wall. Walls are going to surround you. You will not find the path, the way to go. And then you just say, oh, well, I'll go back to my lovers, but you're not going to catch them. They don't care about you anymore. And then Israel will say, oh, well, I'll go back to my former husband. That's Yahweh. It was better then. God says in verse 8, she, that's Israel, does not recognize that it is I who gave her the grain. In other words, it was God who gave her all that grain when she was wealthy, using all that grain and new wine and oil, thinking it came from the idols that Israel was worshiping, when actually all that stuff came from God. And then they took all that silver, gold, wine, new oil, and grain, and instead of giving God thanks for it, they used for Baal. They either devoted these things to Baal or actually made idols of Baal. Baal, of course, is the common Phoenician god that we all know about. It's everywhere, all over the ancient Near East. So God says, okay, you're going to keep doing this spiritual adultery. Verse 9, I will take back my grain in its time and my new wine in its season. It's all going away. I will take away my wool and linen, which was to cover her nakedness. So instead of being wealthily attired, you're going to be naked as a jaybird. We go now to Hosea 2, verses 10 through 13. Yahweh continues speaking to Hosea. Now I will expose her shame in the sight of her lovers. Again, this is apostate Israel acting like a whore. Now I will expose her shame in the sight of her lovers, and no one will rescue her from my hands. I will put an end to all her celebrations, her feast, new moons, and Sabbaths. And of course, all that happened in 722 when the Assyrians came. All her festivals, I will devastate her vines and fig trees. She thinks that these are her wages that her lovers have given her, all of her idolatrous lovers. I will turn them into a thicket, and the wild animals will eat them. And I will punish her for the days of the Baals when she burned incense to them, put on her rings and her jewelry, and went after her lovers, but forgot me. This is the Lord's declaration. Now, of course, all this did happen. So the bad news is that Israel's going to be punished in 722 for her apostasy, her adultery, her spiritual unfaithfulness. We'll get to the end of the chapter, and we'll see that we'll be returned after that exile, because God is a God of mercy. Judgment is a strange thing to him. He doesn't like it. He does it because he has to punish. Verse 10, now I will expose her shame. The Holman Christian Study Bible has, the New American Standard Bible has, lewdness. I will expose her lewdness in the sight of her lovers. Literally, the Hebrew is the shame of her nakedness. God would lay Israel naked before the world, and her lovers would look on and say and do nothing. They're not going to mess with God. They're not going to mess with the Assyrians either. So she's naked and ashamed. The idea of being naked might also have the meaning that she's bereft of every material possession. Somewhat similar ideas. Now her lovers, I've been saying, are her idols. But but her lovers could also be the nations with which she made foreign alliances, which were pagan, like Syria. Northern Israel loved to ally with Syria to try to keep the Assyrians off their back. But no one will rescue them. That's because the Assyrians came and wiped out northern Israel. I will put an end to all her celebrations, her feast. Now, Jeroboam, the first of Jeroboam, had changed the feast with his counterfeit religion that he had set up, the golden calf religion, golden calf in Dan, golden calf in Bethel. He also changed the Feast of Tabernacles. Let's read that in 1 Kings 12, verse 32 and verse 33. Jeroboam made a festival. Now, Jeroboam started the northern kingdom in 931 when the kingdom split. Jeroboam made a festival in the 8th month on the 15th day of the month. Now, if you remember, the Feast of Tabernacles is supposed to be in the 7th month on the 15th day of the month. So Jeroboam set up a counterfeit festival a month later, like the festival in Judah. 1 Kings says, he offered sacrifices on the altar. He made this offering in Bethel to sacrifice to the calves he had set up. He also stationed the priest in Bethel for the high places he had set up. He offered sacrifices on the altar he had set up in Bethel on the 15th day of the 8th month, not the 7th. He chose this month on his own, not by God. He made a festival for the Israelites, offered sacrifices on the altar, and burned incense. God's going to put an end to all that, he says in Hosea 2:11. Her feast. Now the new moons and Sabbaths were done just the same as in the south, on the right time, the right day, with the right sacrifices, I presume. But they're going to be done away with too. The people of northern Israel only indulged those sacrifices and feasts and new moons and Sabbaths carnally as a weary indulgence. They didn't care about God. So God's going to wipe all that out too, and that happened in 722. God says in verse 12, I will devastate her vines and fig trees. That happened, 722. She thinks that these are her wages that her lovers have given her. Well, remember, Israel was a prostitute. She's selling herself for money. She's not only an idolater, she's a whore, a harlot. She's taking pay for her promiscuous love. So God says, I will turn her vines and fig trees into a thicket. In other words, just a jungle so that you can't use the vines and the fig trees. The wild animals will eat them. The wild animals will eat the vines and the fig trees, kind of like deer eat your garden. I will punish her for the days of the Baals when she burned incense to them, when she put on her rings and her jewelry. Now the NASB for rings has earrings, but then the note says, or nose rings. Home and Christian Study Bible just has rings to avoid the issue. But the point is, whether it's nose rings or earrings, it's all done so she could make herself attractive to her idolatrous lovers. She went after her lovers but forgot me. This is the Lord's declaration. Hosea 2:14. Therefore, behold, I will allure her, bring her into the wilderness, and speak kindly to her. Now the good news begins in verse 14. God tempers his judgments with allurements and mercy. Now he's going to bring her into the wilderness. That, I think, is equivalent to our expression, we're being taken to the woodshed by our parents to get whooped. God is going to take his wife Israel, take Israel into the wilderness. After chastising her, then he's going to say, look, I'm going to give you some good news now. I'm going to speak kindly to you. We go now to Hosea 2:15. There, that's in the wilderness, I will give her vineyards back to her and make the valley of Achor into a gateway of hope. There she will respond as she did in the days of her youth, as in the day she came out of the land of Egypt. So now we have the restored Israel. She'll get her vineyards back, so she'll be fruitful, and the Valley of Achor will be turned into a gateway of hope. What is the allusion there? Well, the Valley of Achor, translated, means Valley of Trouble. It was called that because if you recall, when Joshua crossed the Jordan River with the children of Israel, one of the first problems they had, they stopped in Ai, and Achan, after a battle, took some of the spoil, hid it under his tent. He wasn't supposed to do that. I think he lied about it, if I recall. He ended up getting himself killed and his family for rebelling against God. And so that was a troublesome time. And so Achor was called the Valley of Trouble. Well, that describes Israel during her time of rebellion and idolatry, all during the time of the northern kingdom, from 931 to 722. Trouble, trouble, trouble. But now the Valley of Achor is going to be turned into a gateway of hope. The Valley of Achor was a gateway into the land of Israel, and now to go through this gateway, symbolically speaking, you're going to go into a place of hope. And of course, this is referring to the restoration of Israel, both physically after the Assyrian captivity. Some of them ended up going back to Jerusalem along with the Babylonian captives in 538. But also, more importantly, Israel is going to go through a gateway of hope when Israel becomes the new Israel, the church of Jesus Christ, the church of the Messiah. In the second sentence of verse 15, God says that Israel will respond as she did in the days of her youth. The NASB, instead of respond, has sing. Therefore, she will sing as she did in the days of her youth. When Israel was young and when she had passed the Dead Sea, as she came out of Egypt, the Israelites sang at the shore of the Red Sea. We read that in Exodus 15:1. Then Moses and the sons of Israel sang this song to the Lord and said, I will sing to the Lord, for he is highly exalted. The horse and its rider he has hurled into the sea. That's referring to the unfortunate demise of the army of Pharaoh. Revelation 15:3 says, And they sang the song of Moses, the bondservant of God, and the song of the Lamb, saying, Great and marvelous are your works, O Lord God the Almighty. Righteous and true are your ways, King of the nations. So Christians are going to sing the song of Moses too. We go now to Hosea chapter 2, verses 16 through 17. It will come about in that day, declares the Lord, that you will call me Ishi, and will no longer call me Baali. For I will remove the name of the Baals from her mouth, so that they will be mentioned by their names no more. Now, I use the NASB translation here because it gives you the Hebrew straight transliterated. Ishi means my husband, as the note says in the NASB. So, then you will call me Ishi, my husband. Affection is the main idea here in that Hebrew expression. And you will no longer call me Baali. The NASB note says that Baali means my master or my Baal. The main idea is rule. Now, what is Yahweh getting at here? That Israel will no longer call Yahweh by a pagan name, by an idolater's name, Baali? That could be. Another option is Israel will no longer look at Yahweh as a harsh taskmaster, but a loving father instead. I'm not really sure what Yahweh meant there, and I didn't see anything in my commentators, so I'll leave you with my thoughts there. We go now to Hosea 2, verses 18 through 20. In that day I will also make a covenant with them, with the beast of the field, the birds of the sky, and the creeping things of the ground, and I will abolish the bow, the sword, and war from the land, and will make them lie down in safety. I will betroth you to me forever. Yes, I will betroth you to me in righteousness and in justice, in loving kindness and in compassion, and I will betroth you to me in faithfulness. Then you will know the Lord. Now God says he's going to make a covenant with beasts of the field. That's, of course, poetic. Beasts are not smart enough to enter into a covenant. But what he means is God's going to say, okay, beast, I'll make a deal with you. How about leave the Israelites alone and quit eating up their crops? The birds of the sky, quit eating up their crops. The creeping things of the ground, quit screwing things up agriculturally for the Jews. And then, of course, the bow, the sword, and war, there'll be peace. They'll lie down in safety. Now, when did this happen? Well, you could say it happened on the return of Israel from Babylon in 538 or so B.C. But I think more probably this is a prophecy of New Covenant times, Gospel times, as John Gill says. And of course, the dispensationalist commentator Guzik says it's the millennium. Let me make a point here. All of these return verses, restoration verses, I'll call them, and we've seen them here in Hosea, we've seen them in Jeremiah, we've seen them in Isaiah, in Ezekiel. Dispensationalists like Guzik love to take all of those wonderful promises and fast forward them to the millennium, jumping over the church so the church misses all those blessings. All those prophecies that are pointing toward the church, no, they point toward the millennium. And I think that's a tragic mistake. A tragic mistake. One more example of how dispensationalists turn the glorious church of Christ into a gap, into a parenthesis, into a nothing burger. We need the church to be strong, folks, because things are not going well for the church now, and the church needs to be extremely strong. And if we sit around waiting to get raptured out, and instead of facing the fact that we're going to be persecuted, well, then we're kidding ourselves. All right, enough of that theological rant. Notice in verse 20, And I will betroth you to me in faithfulness, then you will know the Lord. Kind of like what Jeremiah said in his famous prophecy. Jeremiah 31:31, quoted in Hebrews 8, verse 8, I think it is. We will all know the Lord. You know the Lord. You know Yahweh through Jesus Christ. We go now to Hosea 2, verse 21 through 23, and we will finish this chapter. It will come about in that day that I will respond, declares the Lord. I will respond to the heavens, and they will respond to the earth. And the earth will respond to the grain, to the new wine, and to the oil, and they will respond to Jezreel. I will sow her for myself in the land. I will also have compassion on her who had not obtained compassion. And I will say to those who are not my people, you are my people. And they will say, you are my God. Now, this is quite poetic in verses 21 and 22. I'm going to go at it backwards. First of all, the first person who's asking for something is Jezreel. Well, who is Jezreel? That's the people of Israel. As John Gale says, Jezreel is the people of Israel who had before been signified by a son of the prophet of this name. Jezreel means scattered, but it also means to sow, which is kind of interesting. It has a negative connotation and a positive connotation. God, in chapter 1, names the first child of Gomer scattered Jezreel because he's about to scatter the Jews in 722 when the Assyrians came in. But now, when he is going to restore the Jews, he calls them Jezreel, which means to sow, to be sown in the land. All right, so let me show you how this is so by looking once again at the last verse in Hosea 1. This is Hosea 1, verse 11. And the Judeans and the Israelites will be gathered together. They will appoint for themselves a single ruler and go up from the land, or go up from the earth, into exile, out of exile, under a single ruler, and that could be Zerubbabel coming back from Babylon, but Zerubbabel is a type of Christ. For the day of Jezreel will be great, for the day of planting will be great. So there, the term has now got a positive meaning to it. So that's Jezreel, so let's go back to verse 22. They will respond to Jezreel. So Jezreel, Israel, will ask the earth. And so Jezreel will ask the grain. We need some grain. We need some new wine. We need some oil. And the grain and the new wine and the oil say, well, wait a minute, we need to ask the earth for some water so we can grow. And so they ask the earth for some water. Then the earth says, well, I don't have any water, so I need to ask the heavens. And so the earth asks the skies. And then the skies say, okay, I need to ask God for some water. And so the skies ask God for some water. That's how this convoluted metaphor works. Let me read it in the way that it was given. It will come about in that day that I will respond, declares the Lord. I will respond to the heavens. The heavens ask God for water, and they will respond to the earth. The earth asks the heavens for water, and the earth will respond to the grain. The grain is asking the earth for water, to the wine and the new oil, as well as the grain. And the grain, new wine, and oil will respond to Israel, Jezreel, asking for some agricultural plenty. In verse 23, God says, I will sow her for myself in the land. Israel will be planted in the land. Remember, Jezreel means to sow. Now, here are some options as to how Israel was sown in the land. Option number one, Israel returned from exile from Babylon in 538. And, of course, the northern Israelites were part of that return because some of the exile scattered from northern Israel in 722 would end up in Babylon. And even if they didn't, they could see that the return was going on, and they could then move from wherever they had been exiled to into the returning exiles and go back to Jerusalem and help establish Israel again. Also, some northern Israelites could have moved down to the south before 722 and could have been in the south when the Babylonians took the southern kingdom of Judah in 586. So Israel, all of Israel, returns from exile in Babylon in 538. That's option number one as to how Israel was sown in the land. Option number two, the new Israel, the church, is planted in the world, in the earth. Barnes and Ellicott have this idea. Ellicott quotes Romans 9, 25 and 26 as proof, and this is a key verse here. Paul is speaking, Romans 9, 25 and 26, as he also says in Hosea, as God also says in Hosea, I will call not my people, that's lo ami, my people, ami, and she who is unloved, lo ruhamah, beloved, ruhamah. The lo is knocked off. Lo means no. And it will be in the place where they were told, you are not my people, lo ami, then they will be called sons, ami, of the living God. Well, the people of the living God, the sons of the living God. And the sons of the living God are obviously Christians. So Paul takes this prophecy of Hosea and fulfills it directly in the New Testament church. So that is what Hosea means when he says that Israel will be sown in the land. Verse 23, I will sow her for myself in the land. It means he's going to start the church in the land. Now, of course, We could have a combination of option one, the physical return of the Jews from Babylon in 538. We could take that as a type of the sowing of the church in the land, which is what I do. I like to have the type and the fulfillment of the type and the antitype, all together in the prophecy. Poole takes it that way. He says, the Jews multiplied after the Babylonian captivity. There's your type. But much more are the numbers increased since the preaching of the gospel and the gathering in the dispersed elect of God. There's your antitype. Now there's a fourth option here from Benson. The converted Jews could be planted in the land, and then a harvest of Gentile converts should arise from those converted Jews. I guess Benson is referring to the early Jewish church in Jerusalem. I don't think that's what Hosea means here, and it's possible, so I mention it. Now in verse 23, we see that word land. I will sow her for myself in the land. That's the NASB translation. Now that Hebrew there is ba'aretz. Ba is a preposition meaning in, and aretz means the land, in the land. Well, you could take that expression as in the land or in the earth. Just what Poole says about taking it in the land. Either the land of Canaan, if you refer this to the Jews after the captivity, or the whole earth as places and nations, if you do, as you should, refer it to gospel days. And so we have seen this promise fulfilled. So really it should be, I will sow you in the earth. Much better translation, I think, there in that case is earth rather than land. Barnes is very adamant about that. He says, quote, God does not say in their own land, i.e. Judea, but the earth. The whole earth was to be the seed plot of the church, where God would sow her to himself, plant, establish, cause her to increase, and multiply her mightily. It's so nice when the commentators agree because it's so obvious. God is sowing Israel in the land in order to start the church of Jesus Christ. We go here from the old Israel being punished to the old Israel being restored as a physical nation, and then we go from there to the establishment of the new Israel, the spiritual Israel, the church. So ladies and gentlemen, we have now finished Hosea chapter 2. We're now ready to go to Hosea 3, which I will entitle Hosea Redeems His Wife. I hope you stay tuned for that audio, and I hope you enjoyed this one.